Welcome to Torah Timecha Parasha of the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Esther Shkap, and today we'll be learning Parashat Va'etchanan. This week's Parasha includes some of the most monumental passages that are central to Judaic thought and practice. Moshe oversaw the settlements of the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of the tribe of Menashe. Finally, he set aside three towns of refuge, Arei Miklat, for each of the three settlements, modeling what Yehoshua and the Zkenim will need to do after his death on the western bank when they finally cross the Jordan River and conquer the land of Canaan. He repeats the Aseret HaDibrot with some variations and elucidations, most notably in the rationale given for Shabbat. Whereas the original commandment was Zachor et Yom HaShabbat Lekadsho, and was explained as a memorial to the creations of the heaven and earth in 6 days by the Ribbono Shel Olam, in Sefer Devarim, Moshe explains that the obligation to observe Shabbat, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, as opposed to Zachor et Yom HaShabbat, is linked to the memory of slavery in Egypt, from which Hashem liberated us through open miracles. Ibn Ezra, Radak, and Ramban, among others, suggest that the Ten Commandments presented in the Book of Shemot were the words of Hashem, and those in our parasha are paraphrases by Moshe Rabbeinu, in which he adds explanatory changes and inserts periodically Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha to indicate that he is not the author or the source of these commandments. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and others suggest that these variations are appropriate additions necessary for a new generation who did not directly experience the Exodus, and for those that did not directly experience the giving of the Ten Commandments initially at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu is aware of the dangers posed by environmental and social pressures that will impinge on those entering the land of Israel, and he is warning them to be vigilant that they must not be influenced by the surrounding cultures, where then they might assimilate immoral, idolatrous behaviors, practices prevalent among the peoples in the religion. He stresses again and again that there is only one God, and that the Israelites must resist all temptations and inclinations to create intermediaries between themselves and Hashem. He introduces what may be the most pivotal passage in Jewish liturgy, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and stresses that one must not confuse observable physical forces and powers for the ineffable Hashem, who remains invisible, though he created and moved all the forces that they can see. Moshe underscores, Ata horeta ladat, you were shown so that you would know, that we as a people were allowed to perceive with our senses through miracles in the wilderness and by hearing the voice of Hashem himself, and as a result have come to know, not just believe, that the unseen, unfathomable God is also immanent and loving. That knowledge and our collective experience is the foundation of our obligation to love Hashem and display that love by observing his commandments and by going beyond the mitzvot to a higher ethic, Vehasita HaTov VeHayashar, to do what is good and honest in the eyes of God, knowing that we were created for a higher purpose. We will today return to the beginning of the parasha, where the introductory speech that Moshe made in last week's parasha continues and concludes. And in the process, we are given a rare glimpse into Moshe's personal struggles as he faces his imminent death. What is the purpose of the story of Moshe's pleas, Va'etchanan ba'et hahi? It seems that those are futile pleas to enter the land of Israel. Why do we need to know this? Abarbanel asks why Moshe seems so afraid of death. Doesn't he recognize the wondrous pleasure awaiting him in the spiritual world after death? And finally, given his heartfelt prayers, why didn't Hashem relent and let him enter Eretz Yisrael? Ramban suggests that Moshe includes the story of his futile prayers to enter Eretz Yisrael as part of his admonishment of Israel, accusing them of causing his suffering by their stiff-necked whining and complaining. Undoubtedly, in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, Moshe seems to be admonishing the people when he recalls the sin of the spies and explains why the generation leaving Egypt were condemned to die in the wilderness. At that time, last week, he said, Vayishma Hashem et kol divrichem, vayiktsof, vayishava lemor. Hashem heard the sound of your words. He was angry and he swore, Im yireh ish ba'anashim ha'ele, hador hara hazeh et ha'aretz ha'tova. None of these people, these evil people, will see the good land. Unquestionably, it seems there that Moshe is accusing when he adds, Gam bi hitanaf Hashem biglalchem lemor gam ata lo tavosham. When Hashem told him, you too will not come there. But he added the word biglalchem, because of you. And there it seems that Moshe is accusing Am Yisrael for his fate. But in our parasha, at the end of the introductory speech, Moshe makes a not insignificant change in his words. When he says, Va'etchanan el Hashem ba'et ahi, I pleaded with Hashem at that time. Vayit Abel Hashem, Hashem crossed me. He was angry with me. Lema'anchem, for your sakes, velo shama'ela, and he would not heed me. Malbim and Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch point out that the accusation in last week's parasha was directed at the old generation, and not at the new generation that will enter Eretz Yisrael. Here Moshe says that God would not listen to him for their sake, because Hashem loves them. Ibn Ezra, on the other hand, notices the context of this story, and he suggests that Moshe wanted to endear Eretz Yisrael to the generation of Israelites about to cross the Jordan River. He wants them to cherish the land and understand that they risk losing it if they abrogate the conditions for holding on to the land. Only if the children of Israel will keep the mitzvot of Hashem and prove themselves worthy will they maintain sovereignty in their own country. Should they breach the covenant with Hashem and stoop to the level of the Canaanites, they will lose the land and be exiled and subjugated to cruel persecution. Chazal add that Moshe was honored to serve as Hashem's messenger to teach Am Yisrael Torah. But complete fulfillment of the Torah and its mitzvot is possible only in Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe longed to fulfill those mitzvot, along with the people he led for so many years. Abarbanel adds that Moshe, like every human being, wants to see the fruits of his labor. For 40 years in the desert, he carried the burden of a troublesome nation. He taught them. He tolerated them. He advocated for them. He gave up his personal life for them. It's only natural that he wanted to reap the nachas of seeing them settled as a free and responsible Am Sgula. Rashi, citing Chazal, says that Moshe chose to plea at this time because he found himself willy-nilly in Eretz Yisrael. He was standing in the territory that was annexed and divided among Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. He imagined that perhaps the decree had been annulled because he was, in fact, in the land settled by 2.5 tribes. Medrash Tanchuma adds that Moshe was concerned, and that's why he pleaded, that he would be lumped together with the generation that did not want to enter the land. He was afraid that he would be mistaken to be a sinner just like the spies were. He pleads with Hashem to differentiate his fate from those of the spies, where Hashem had condemned them. Kol menatzai lo yiruha. All those who angered me, who aggravated me, will not see the land. Moshe was certainly no menaetz. He did not blaspheme or anger God, which is why, explains the Chatam Sofer, Hashem relented and allowed him to see the land, sending him to the top of the mountain and showing him the land from north to south, thereby granting him only half his wish. For tefillah can only do half the job. And Hashem therefore relents and says, Re'eh be'enecha, you can see it with your eyes, v'shama lo tavo, but there you will not cross, you will not go over the Jordan River. Moshe was willing to hand over the mantle of leadership to his protege, Yehoshua, and he was even willing to subjugate himself to his student and be just one of the people going in as an anonymous little nobody. But according to Abarbanel, Hashem explained to him that it was impossible for Yehoshua to become the effective leader that he should be so long as Moshe remains alive. And that's why he said to him, Rav lecha? Yehoshua will become your Rebbe? Al tosef daber elai badavar hazeh. Don't speak to me anymore about this. Once more, Moshe Rabbeinu gives in and submits. Lemanchem, for the sake of his nation, he sacrifices himself. This, the most humble of all men. Thank you for learning with me.